Hey, everybody. You know, it's really interesting how when something happens regionally, the rest of the country really doesn't know about it. And we just went through, actually it's still happening right now, but Hurricane Matthew was threatening. And I think that this was the largest in terms of at least the warning. This was the largest alert that I had ever seen after having lived in Florida for 20 plus years, that this was going to be a big one. And for any of us who've been through a big hurricane, it's worse than you imagine. So they did a really good job, and everybody shuttered up their homes. Right now I'm in my house, and I can't see daylight because there's metal shutters on every window. And everybody pulls everything off the street, and people evacuate the beach areas. And it was major. So it's really interesting how while this is going on, you know, friends and business colleagues who live in other parts of the country, they're sending me emails, texts, expecting that it's business as usual. You know, Sarah, was it anything like usual down here yesterday?
I don't know. I didn't leave my apartment. So I don't know.
And every news, every TV channel just has the news with the hurricane warning. So you're totally disconnected from the rest of the world. So we anticipated, because this is what they said. They said people will die. I mean, blatantly, this is what the mayor said. People will die. You know, the hurricane warnings keep coming. And they said, take it seriously. Leave the beaches. Evacuate. And nobody will have power. And some of you, you might not have power for weeks. So everybody's in the grocery store, and you're trying to find places that have water left or batteries or flashlights, and all the gas stations run out of gas. And this is what life was like here yesterday. And then you're watching it on TV, and they go, it's coming, it's coming. And they go, it's just about 5 miles off of the coast, and any minute here comes a feeder band. And then they go, it veered a little bit to the east, but it's coming. It's going to hit at 4 o'clock. It's going to hit at 5 o'clock. And now we can breathe a huge sigh of relief because, amazingly, we weren't touched. I mean, there were some winds and there was some rain. So, you know, it's interesting to me how people will get upset. They go, I can't believe you scared us like that. Thank God 1,000 times that it didn't impact us. So I just want to tell you, for those of you who kind of were like, why are they canceling the call? And then why did they decide to do it after all? That's why. I mean, it was completely insane. And now it's just back to normal. And it's just, it's incredible. So I'm very thankful. So I just wanted you guys to understand, because it's not like us to just change a schedule like that. But it was crazy down here yesterday, and now it's not. So for that, I'm glad. All right, I would love to get a little bit of interaction, particularly with one or two people today, and I don't know who they're going to be. I would like somebody to step up, because we're going to go through a little bit of an exercise that I want everybody to do, but it's always valuable if on the call somebody participates so everybody else can sort of get a flavor of what it is that we're supposed to do. So I hope when I say who would like to step up that somebody will. Angie, do you suspect, you don't have to tell me who, do you suspect there's somebody here who is going to go, I'll step up?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do have,
Okay. Oh, you have? You have a ringer?
No, I think
you just
have
a feeling.
I have a feeling.
Okay. Let's just try it. Let's just see. Who's willing to step up fearlessly?
I'll do it.
Who said that?
Allison.
Allison?
Yes.
Good for you. Anyone else, just in case Allison really is terrible at this job? Anyone? I believe in you, Allison. I just want to back up. Anyone else?
I believe in Allison, but if not, I can do it.
Okay, good, good. Okay, so at least we have some live people here willing to participate. Good. Allison, did you ever tell someone what they should do because you knew that they should do whatever it was that you were telling them to do, and they kind of bow their head a little bit and they go, I know. And I'll give you some examples before you answer. Maybe you have a friend who is in a horrible relationship, just a bad relationship, and she's always complaining. And you say, you know, you should really leave him. And she says, I know.
The answer is definitely yes.
Give me an example. Can you think of an example?
Well, my younger brother is actually living with me right now, mm-hmm. and he is well, he graduated from school and played football, and now he's a strength trainer. He's just trying to get his feet and figure out where he wants to go. So in, you know, all of my wisdom, I pretty much, we have this situation like once a week where I'm like, you really should do this, or you should go talk to this person and make this connection. And he says, I know.
So I don't want you to answer this yet, but I want you to think about the answer to this question. Does he really know? Don't answer me, but just think about it, because he's saying, I know. You're saying, you know what? You just stepped into the world of being a grown-up, right? I mean, this is not games anymore. This is not football anymore. You've proven yourself as a student, and now here you are. You're a grown-up, and you have a credential, and you need to go out in the real world. So you should talk to, and he goes, I know. Now, does he really know, or is it just his way of just shutting you up? Nicely, you know, tactfully. Is it his way of going, leave me alone? But rather than saying that, because that'll prompt an argument, he goes, I know, I know. So does he really know? Who else can think of an example of that? Now, when this happens, very often the I know is followed by a but or a can't. Like sometimes there's an excuse that follows, right? It's like, I know, but there's still the acknowledgement of I know. Maybe it's someone who has a miserable, underpaying job, and they complain about it, and they complain about their boss, and they complain about the office, and they complain about work. They complain about all the driving they have to do to get to work. And you say, you know, you really should leave that job. And they say, I know. Or maybe it's someone who is doing CrossFit, even though you really know they shouldn't, because it's just too much for them. They're not conditioned enough. And maybe they should start a more reasonable program. Or maybe it's someone who should stop their impotent walking program and start doing CrossFit. Or maybe it's someone who should stop smoking cigars, or at least stop smoking cigars in the house. Or maybe it's someone who should stop eating ice cream before bed. And you tell them this, and they say, I know. Or maybe it's someone who should stop being rude to another person. You go, you know, you really shouldn't be so mean to her. I know. Or maybe it's someone who should stop spending money on things that he or she really can't afford. Or maybe it's someone who should stop drinking on weeknights because they show up and they're all hungover. You know, you really shouldn't drink on weeknights. I know. Or any one of a thousand things I can come up with. You tell them what they should do and they say, I know. I want everyone to think of someone who knows the answer to their own problem. Is there anyone else who could give me an example? Just give me an example. I gave you lots. Just give me one from you, your world where you tell somebody what they should do and they go, I know. Now we picked the right one with Allison. She had an answer. Okay,
hey,
so go ahead.
I have a buddy who he had a nutrition store and was really healthy and now he does like construction stuff, but he drinks all these energy drinks he's pounding them down. I'm like, dude, you're gonna have a heart attack, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I know, that's bad, I gotta stop it. And then he still does it though.
So does he really know? When he says that to you, is it really, like if you could really read his mind, would it be, stop nagging me? I love the way these energy drinks make me feel. I'm not going to stop no matter what you say. You're not me. You can't possibly understand. Is it that, or does he really know?
No, people really know. What I think, I think that,
no idea.
I think people know. You know, because a lot of times it's common sense, just like, yeah, I shouldn't smoke cigarettes, I might get cancer. Yeah, I know that. But they don't actually think that it's going to cause a problem or it's more painful to give up what they have. It's whatever, their vice. So, you know, they're complacent where they are, and it's rather not strange.
Okay. When someone says, I know, that really suggests certainty. Right? It really suggests certainty. So you're saying...
What are you taking that for?
The smoker who said, what are you taking that for? Because we can hear you.
What are you taking those for?
Who's saying, what are you taking those for? Somebody has no idea that we can hear them?
That's kind of a creepy voice, too.
Yeah, what are you taking those for? Because you really shouldn't take them. I know. All right. If he shows up again, I'm going to mute everybody. But for now, we'll go forward. Allison, back to you. Does he really know?
Well, he certainly lacks conviction.
But does he really know? Does when somebody has a family member who keeps borrowing money for gambling, and you go, you should really stop gambling, and they go, I know, just this last time. Do they really know, or do they believe that they're going to win next time? You know, what you just gave the example earlier of somebody who knows they should quit smoking. Do they really know? Because if they don't believe it will hurt them, then they really don't know. They just don't want to hear it anymore. Here's what I think. I think in most cases, people know. I do. Maybe it's what they would call a weakness in willpower. You know, when it comes to the energy drinks, maybe it's what we would call an addiction. But I think that they really know. Now, this is different than when somebody says, I know what to eat, I just don't do it, right? You've all met that guy. You do a consultation, you have a new client, you're talking to them about their diet, and you go, you know, you really shouldn't be eating all of these breads and all of these pastas. And they go, I know what to eat, I just don't. I just don't do it. See, I think in that case, they don't know. They don't know. And I'm not talking about a specific factual knowledge. I'm talking about an obvious action that somebody would find benefit in. Without question, they'd find benefit in. They know it's the right thing to do. They'll admit that they know when they're confronted. I think that person really does know. So here's what I'm going to tell you. Right now, with all the work that we've done, regardless of your level of participation, if you were on most of the calls, or you listened to the recordings of most of the calls, or if you invested even a small amount of thought in the directives, then here's what I'm going to tell you. You know. You really know. I know you really know. The directives you didn't do, if I confront you on it, you're going to go, I know, but I was so busy. I know, but it wasn't the right time. I know, but TCD. I know, but I had to go through a move. I know, but, and here's what I know. You guys really know. I'm just a facilitator at this point. Early on, I told you guys that we're going to change mindset. We're going to change the way you think. We're finished with that phase. Now it comes down to the way you act. So for the next four calls, including today, you're going to commit to act on what you know you should do. So if you are, in fact, the brother who is needing to talk to somebody about starting life, if you are that person, then today's call will prompt you to do it. If you are the person who consumes energy drink after energy drink and you really know you should stop, then today's call will prompt you to stop. So we're going to use this 90 minutes to give you enough access to what you know so the path becomes clear. So this needs to be a call of interactivity, Allison, a call of dialogue, a call of assessment, of insight, and of forward motion. On the last call, we spoke about this concept of full engagement. I'd like to experience full engagement today. Are you up for it? Are you willing to be honest and unguarded and really fully engage in this process of just doing what you know you should do? Who can say yes to that?
Yes.
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 Yeah.
So the intention of this call is twofold. Andrew, did you get the handout? Did you send them the handout? Or Sarah?
I don't have a handout that I have to send anyone.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get a handout either.
You didn't. Okay. Okay, so you guys will be able to download it after. So there's a handout that goes along with all of this. So as soon as we finish the call, you can download it. The intention is twofold. One, to get you to integrate the most basic principle of betterment into your life. Now that sounds pretty important, right? The most basic principle of betterment. Somehow you want your life to be better. Doesn't mean your life is bad. Most of you have lives that are pretty good, but you want it to be better, which is why you're here. So that's the first part, is we want to get you to integrate the foundational principle of betterment. Secondly, I want you to take a ride through everything we've covered and maximize your use of all of the strategies, all of the tools, all of the perspectives, everything that we've gone over the past 6 months, getting you to stare directly into what you already know, and then prompting you to make decisions to act upon that knowledge. So the first question I have is, regardless of the number of strategies that you've actually implemented, or the number of directives that you've followed, or the number of changes that you've made, who can share one principle that you picked up from this program, and I got Allison as my backup, but let me see if I can get somebody else. Who can share one principle that you picked up from this program, whether it's addressing the four monsters, or combating the monsters with the heroes, or taking control of the tug of war between the EEM that limits you and the PFC that gives you a sense of possibility, or nudging the needle instead of putting the pedal to the metal, or identifying your personality type. Are you a lion? Are you an otter, a golden retriever, or a beaver, so that you can better understand your behaviors? Or connecting with the concept of creative tension, or the idea of staying in prime and recognizing the traps of being in sustenance or being in stability, or anything else. I just want someone to share one principle that you've connected with and tell me how you've either used it or come to appreciate its value. Who can do that?
I can do it, Niles.
Okay, go ahead, Niles.
I think I really like appreciate the nudging the needle, and kind of the idea of something that's stuck into my brain is, when you want something done, right, don't always think about the how it's going to happen, or the thought process that goes into it. I mean, I'm definitely one of those people who I go, okay, want to do this, and then everything has to be kind of figured out a lot of times or before I do anything about it, which, you know, it kind of makes me, I'm looking into myself, like, I go, I should do this, and then I go, I know. But because it totally stops me from doing anything sometimes. So that nudging the needle and kind of just knowing what you want and taking those small steps has, I think, been very valuable to me.
Good. Can you think of an example of how you've utilized that, if you have?
I think one of the things we did with the Profit Center, you know, I just started nudging the needle on that, and it started to take pace, which is good, where I thought I had to have all this things set up with the website and how I had to have this list set up and so on. And then also just with my task lists, you know, I want to learn this and I want to do that. And just kind of using baby steps with everything.
Naz, I can't tell you how many people I meet who professionally get stuck with the website. I don't know why this becomes such an obstacle. But there's always this sense of they have to do the website. Sometimes it means update the website. Sometimes it means add new copy to the website. Sometimes it means start a website. Sometimes it means get a different website. Sometimes it means integrate ClickFunnels into the website. But it's amazing that the number of people that I talk to that just get tripped up by that, and that's exactly what you're talking about, because now there's this thought of what am I going to write and how many pages and who's going to do it and what's the graphic going to look like, and they get so caught that they do nothing. So the concept of nudging the needle is a very, very powerful concept, and that's a very, very good example. So I'm glad. And sometimes you can't figure out everything you're going to do until you take that first step. Sometimes the view changes when you take that first step, right? So when you say, you know what, I don't have to know how. I just have to know where I'm going to put my foot right now. When you do that, suddenly there's another step that follows. So I'm glad you received that. That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Can I get somebody else to share one more principle?
I will.
This is Randy.
Okay, wait. Who said I will?
Randy.
Okay, Randy.
The four monsters, for me, recognizing what they are, and when we first started, I said, oh, yeah, that's me. And it was, now I just forgot it, procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as I started just paying attention to that and saying, no, stop that, I recognized that the bigger picture was money worry.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, being able to see that and recognize, okay, this has been going on for a number of years, being able to combat that and knowing strategies then to handle that and to change that has really helped my mindset significantly. And it's changing a lot of, I'm seeing things happen currently that I recognize more and more that this is becoming less and less of a tidal wave over me and more of, hey, I just got to jump over this puddle.
That's great. Are you a visual person?
Very much so.
If you listen back to the recording, you'll notice how many times you said the word see. You need to see it, or now you could see it. Now you could recognize it. And then you give the descriptive visuals of the tidal wave and jumping over the puddle. So you're a very visual person. I want to tell you why this is really valuable for you. Because, look, I didn't invent a recognition of these concepts. You know, everybody knows that they procrastinate. Everybody knows that they get distracted. Money worry is a different issue. That's hard for people at first because when they're in money worry's power, they want to deny that it's money worry. They want to say to you, no, my problem's different. But once you start to recognize these things, a word you used, now you catch yourself and that gives you the ability to interrupt it. So that's really what this is a metaphor for, is interrupting these behaviors. And if you're a visual person, the behaviors sound abstract. You can't picture procrastination. So for somebody like you, you may know you're procrastinating, but you really don't know how to react to it because there's no visual. And just the simple concept of giving it a monster image allows you to now have something to combat, right? Because that's the way your mind works. So now you go, oh, there's the procrastination monster. I'm going to shut him down. So whether you're now jumping over a puddle or stopping a tidal wave, you know, in your mind, that's the hero. That's the stopping that monster from acting. So I'm really glad that you chose that and share that, because sometimes it sounds so silly that I'm talking about monsters and heroes. But this is the way our brains operate, and now we can catch them and we can stop them. So I'm really, really glad. I appreciate that. Thank you, Randy.
You're welcome.
Should I go for one more? Let me get one more. Allison, you're in the batter's box. You're on deck if I need you.
Okay. This is Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
I love visualizing for 5 minutes every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
It's fun. Why? Because you're actually experiencing.
It's fun because I know that that's going to bring me one step closer to my result. And it's kind of like when you were a kid and you could make believe. I didn't. Well, you know, I guess I must have done that more than I think. But it's fun because it's just fun to picture yourself there. And, you know, I'm there and I'm in my lake house with my grandkids and it's fun.
But I'm going to tell you why it's fun.
Because I want it.
Even more so than that. Yes, that's part of the reason. It's fun because the visualization is not limited to a visualization. The visualization comes with emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
sure.
In other words,
oh, yeah.
if somebody drew a picture of a roller coaster and showed it to you, you would judge the picture. You'd go, oh, that looks really realistic, or, yeah, I see what that is. It's a roller coaster. But you wouldn't have the emotion. When you visualize, you're actually putting yourself there. And your sophisticated brain, in all of its intricacy, starts to believe this is really happening, and you summon up the emotions. Now, what's beautiful is the more you do it, the better your brain gets at attaching emotions to it. So, Tammy, did you go through a period of time where this was new to you and it was kind of hard, like just the 5 minutes or staying in it, or did you just take to this right away? Tammy?
Oh, sorry. I was talking. It was easy for me because I've always had that visualization. What I added was doing it every day.
Right. Which is one of the heroes is discipline. So you didn't do it every day. You just kind of did it when it happened, and then you attached yourself to the discipline of doing it every day.
Right.
Now you would miss it if you stopped, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Can you think of an outcome it actually brought about? Like, can you think of something you say, because of the visualization, I'm now?
Yep. It keeps me from getting distracted by the day-to-day things that don't go perfectly. it helps me know that it's okay for today not to be perfect. Don't let that distract me. Keep being focused on where I'm going.
Beautiful. So it shuts down the distraction monster.
Yeah. And the negative talk, too.
And do your visualizations get better and better, stronger and stronger, higher and higher?
Yes, and longer.
Mm-hmm.
At first, 5 minutes seemed like a long time. And also, as you said, I get more emotional. It's like I'm growing roots.
Good. Very good. Yeah, this whole concept of mindset, you know, I have taken so many courses on mindset, and many of them were so clinical, I didn't know how to share them. I didn't know that anybody would be interested. As you start to try to understand how neurons and dendrites connect, to me it's fascinating, but if I regurgitate everything that came to me, I think it would sound just very boring and dry. But a lot of the workshops that I've been to seem absurd and childish. So I had to find a balance, a way to deliver this where people would get it. And just enough of the science for you to go, okay, I see, this is not just play. There's some real science behind it. But only when it is experiential, only when you do it and have the experience that Tammy did, that you go, you know, I'm behaving differently. And it's fun, and I like it, and I feel good, and I'm going to do it tomorrow because why wouldn't I? And if I don't, then all of the stupid things that make my day imperfect are going to seem important when the truth is they're not. I don't have to be perfect. So all of this is really valuable for me because it validates that the way I delivered it, it was received. So thank you for that, Tammy. Fantastic.
Thank you.
All right, Allison, I still have you on hold.
I'm here.
Do you want to jump in with one or not? You don't have to because I'm coming to you with the big stuff in a few minutes.
No, we can move on. That's good.
Okay. So I said the purpose of the call was twofold. First, I wanted you to integrate what I said is the most foundational principle of betterment. So what can that principle be? The principle is the concept of balance, not just balance, balance between two specific forces, stress and recovery. That's it. That is the baseline principle of improvement for a human being, possibly for every living thing. Stress and recovery. That concept is what allowed me to develop exercise programs that went far beyond just giving people great quads and glutes and abs and take it to a place where we actually make them healthier in a way that is documentable, in a way we can look at biomarkers and see that we've reversed inflammation. Appropriate stress and adequate recovery. Without the stress, you don't get better. You know, people hear that and they go, oh, so recovery is 50% of the battle? Good, I'm going to just sit on the couch and I'll be 50% of the way there. No, it doesn't work that way. You need the balance. You need the stress. When you have stress in business, it helps you. It helps you get better at decision making. It helps you make better choices. Sometimes you make bad choices. They lead to more stress. But it is only when you make the right choices and you can think back and go, wow, that was really good, that you actually find yourself improving when you get out of that stress loop and have some time to recover. People who stay in that stress loop, they suffer in one way or another. When I work with an athlete at the professional level or even as a little leaguer, I have to push that athlete during training and practice and then allow that athlete to rest. And we often call the rest well-deserved. We go, well, he earned it. But the fact is, it's not well-deserved. It's necessary for betterment. If you cut your skin, your immune system has an amazing ability to activate cells that literally rebuild and repair the skin. And your immune system activates white blood cells and clotting factors and building material and pulls amino acids to the site to synthesize new skin. And that skin is not only new, it's tougher. So our body can recover from stress by healing. So that process, stress and recover, or stress and heal, or challenge followed by recovery, that process leads to betterment. So the same is true in your career or in changing your life so it's more congruent, more in line with the wants of your heart. So it's easy to stay in the routine of discontent. It is. And there is stress, but it isn't huge stress. When somebody hears their sister going, you know, it's really time you did something, you know, that's stress, but it's not good stress. They don't walk away from that feeling good. They walk away from that feeling pressured. And when a smoker keeps hearing from other people, you should quit, you should quit, you should quit, that's not huge stress. It's distress or emotional stress. They feel bothered. You want them to recover, but they don't do it that way. In fact, somebody is more likely to quit smoking when they feel good than when they feel bad. You think that if they feel bad enough about smoking, they'll quit, but it doesn't work that way. Because that is not huge stress. That is not a stress that stimulates change. So distress or emotional stress or negative stress, unlike the momentary stress of a wound to the skin or a controlled set of squat jumps, the problem with distress is it perpetuates. It feeds itself. There isn't any recovery if it isn't acted upon. So for you, the stress that I'm talking about is creative tension, is the gap between where you are and where you want to be. And if that could be huge stress, meaning good stress, if you can go, I'm here right now, I don't love where I am, but I'm visualizing where I am up there. And that's just a process of nudging the needle and nudging the needle and nudging the needle. And you could feel good about it. Then you change. Then you change. You've got to recognize the gap between where you are and where you want to be and use emotional cues to stimulate action. And you have to know, not just say I know, you have to really know that stimulating action works for you when it is aimed at what you believe to be a thrilling outcome. So if you stay in your routine, you haven't activated the cycle of huge stress and recovery. So if you haven't done the directives, you're missing out on what is the most foundational principle of betterment. So today, after we go through what is a lengthy exercise that I'm going to encourage most of you to do on your own, I'm going to give you a fantastic tool for recovery. But remember what I said earlier, you can't just do the recovery. That's like somebody sitting on the couch thinking they're going to get more fit. So you need the recovery, but you've also got to take on the good stress. So before we get there, let's get clear on your own creative tension. Let's get clear on the emotional thrill of where you're headed. Let's get clear on the creative tension line that serves as the force that pulls you toward whatever outcome you most desire. So you will download after the call a form. And the form is titled, What Do You Know? Because there are things that you know that you haven't acted upon. We know that. So we're going to try to get you to act upon them. Sometimes, just like the people that you call to mind, you know you should do something, and you just don't do it. We want to change that. We want to get you to do it. So before I go there, are there any thoughts, questions, comments on anything I mentioned? Any excuses anybody wants to get out of the way? Anything you want to talk about based on your experience to this point? Because this is the beginning now of definitive, clear action that there will be no excuses for. So if you want to make the excuses, you know, share them now. I would have done it, Phil, but you see, I couldn't because. I know at least some of the directives are good, but does anybody have any of those? Because I'd rather just get them out.
I have an excuse, Phil.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
This is Andrew. So, you know, I put together, say, my max 10. Mm-hmm. I've got my plan set out for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fire happens, right? This emergency comes up. My consultation's 30 minutes late. And then this happens. And that, and then I'm like, I didn't get it done. I didn't do the, you know, the staff review. I didn't do X. And so, I mean, it's just a bunch of excuses. But but right. But I'm just I'm surviving, right? Or you're just trying to get through things, and you know you have all these hats that you're wearing and juggling stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day or the end of the month, you had intentions to have whatever 30 things done, and you end up with 15, and you're like, okay, I'll try to do better next week.
Do I remember you saying you're visual?
I'm a pretty visual person, yeah.
So the vision of a fire. When you say, then a fire erupts,
mm-hmm.
What does that signify to you, the vision of a fire erupting?
Emergency.
So is it possible you're framing things in your mind as emergencies that really aren't quite emergencies?
Well, it appears to be urgent, you know, something that has to get handled at that point in time. So what tends to happen is, you know, I don't know who it was, Covey or something. You know, he's got
mm-hmm.
the four quadrants there.
Yeah, yeah, Stephen Covey. What's
and
urgent, what's important, right? Urgent
right.
and important, not urgent, not important. Mm-hmm.
Right. So what happens is I have some things that I would say are pretty important. And then some, like, so it happened today, right? I got to the office today. And, you know, I had my max 10 written out of the stuff I was going to do. And all of a sudden, you know, it's Friday, and a consultation shows up, right? And they're supposed to be on the schedule. They're on the schedule for next Friday. But my staff really gave them an appointment for today.
Okay.
And they're not supposed to be there. And, you know, I have all these things that we're supposed to do. But now I've got this urgent thing where I have this consultation, her husband and her, they took time off work. I mean, I'm not going to tell them to, you know, come back next week. You know, it's our screw up. So
raging fire suddenly.
Right. And
right.
Now all the shit I was supposed to get done today hasn't gotten done. And so that's just an example, right? So now I won't get it done, or I got to work on it Saturday, or I'll get it to it next week, right?
Okay. So here's what I'm going to tell you. You can receive this or not. This is 100%, not a little, this is 100% your perception working against you.
Okay.
So on the last call, maybe it was two calls ago, I gave a question. And I said, these are some really good questions to be able to kind of pull out of your pocket. And one of them was, what is the best way to respond? And respond is a very important word. It's different than react. Fire makes you react. So if you're perceiving fire, you react. You start to think, oh, shit, here goes my day. Here goes my plan. Everything's falling apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, what is the best way to respond to this adversity? Now, the truth is, a consultation showing up on the wrong day, that's actually driving revenue. It's not such a horrible thing, right? It's an interruption. And what I said is, there will always be some adversity. There will always be a tree that falls across the path. Always. We never get rid of that. So you can't change that that's going to happen. The only thing you can change is how you perceive it, how you choose to perceive it, and how you respond. So if you can get in the habit of saying, this is not a fire, how do I best respond to this? Will it change everything for you? Yeah, I really think it will, because now tomorrow's max 10 is a little different. Now max 10 really means there are a maximum of 10 things that you're going to commit to in this day. So let me tell you the beauty of this. Let's say because that happened, because this little fire showed up that you're going to now not call a fire anymore, but because this little fire showed up, there are two things on your max 10 that you will not get to. So you pat yourself on the back at the end of the day. You go, I accomplished 8 things, and these are the first two on my max 10 for tomorrow. And I know, you know, from where you sit, you would say something like, well, Phil, you're not living it. You don't understand. Man, I do understand. Believe me, I do. The perception is everything. And all it takes is practice, like working a muscle. That's really what it is for you. So the only question I want to ask you, and I'm going to leave you with that, is do you believe me? And if you don't, you know, be honest.
No, I believe you. And I would say how I, in the last couple months, as far as that stress response, I do roll with things more as far as, okay, I'm not going to get this done now, but, you know, like you said, I have a consultation now. I don't have to do it next Friday, so I can get something done maybe then.
Okay.
So,
and I'm going to ask you to do one more simple thing. Replace the word but with and.
Okay.
Because and sounds like you have control. But sounds like what you just said doesn't matter.
Right. I agree. And I didn't even hear myself say that.
And these are little mindset things that really impact us on a day-to-day basis. So when you make the little shifts and you nudge the needle forward, you'll be amazed what changes in your life in the course of a month and 6 months and a year. Okay, good. Thank you for sharing that and letting me kind of counsel you on it. I appreciate that. All right, so there's a form, as I told you, you'll download. I'm encouraging you to do it as soon as we finish the call. Let's make sure that we can get that posted so everybody has it at the site. And the first question, and I want you to write down the answer. I want everybody to write down the answer. Allison, I will ask you to give me the answer, but not immediately. Okay, we're going to come back and go through these. Who can you call today? Not next week. Not a week from Tuesday. Who can you call today that can make a positive long-term impact upon your business? You can't answer it with nobody. You can't put a question mark. This is a question you have to find the answer to in your mind, in your brain. It's in there. Who can you call today that can make a positive long-term impact upon your business? Now, here's what I'm going to tell you with all of these questions. These are the things you know. Just like people say, I know, but they don't act on it. These are the things you know. Sometimes you have to dig because you covered it up. But there is somebody, probably many somebodies, but there is somebody that if you call today, over time, that phone call will lead to a positive long-term impact upon your business. A former patient, a former business partner, somebody you considered retaining but you didn't, a marketing company. Use your imagination. A neighbor who has a complementary business. A mentor who you lost touch with. Write it down. Who can you call today that can make a positive long-term impact upon your business? Now, if you're willing to accept not writing anything, there's nothing I can do. Honestly, if you're willing to accept that, if you're willing to go, no, this isn't important, that's a mindset issue. Anybody who has been in business for at least a week can answer this question. And if you tell me there's nobody, you're just not exercising that muscle. What's that?
What if we did this yesterday? Do we need to write it down again today? Like, I know we didn't have the call yesterday, but yesterday I did the very thing that you're saying to do right now.
You called somebody that can make a positive long-term impact upon your business?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not the teacher and this is not your homework. Like, you don't have to do it to do your homework, but here's what I would do. I would just put an else in there. Who else can you call? That wasn't the only person. So rather than going, nope, did that one, I'm asking you to challenge yourself a little bit, a little stress followed by recovery. Okay, you started that process. You called somebody. Great. Who else can you call? And I'm not saying somebody who's going to make a major change. I'm just saying somebody who over time, if you make this phone call, over time, they can have a positive impact on your business. You're going to look back and you're going to go, I'm really glad I called him or her. Okay, second question. Who needs to meet you? Or I'll ask it differently. Who that doesn't yet know you exist are you the best option for? Now, at first, this sounds hard. How could I know them if they don't know me? Think. Who that doesn't yet know you exist are you the best option for? Maybe there's somebody you see in a restaurant all the time that has a gait that's revealing of some issue. Maybe there's somebody you see all the time that's overweight and you feel like you might be able to help. Maybe you have a friend who has told you that his friend or his wife or her husband has a thyroid issue. Maybe you read a post on Facebook and you really had the thought, I should really contact this person. Who that doesn't yet know you exist are you the best option for? Maybe it's a friend who says their mom keeps going to the doctor and is just spending more and more money, taking more and more medications. So really, you know you're a better option for that person's mom, but she never met you. She doesn't know you exist. Who that doesn't yet know you exist are you the best option for? Or who needs to meet you? Maybe it's somebody you sort of know, but they don't know what you do. Maybe it's your child's teacher. Maybe it's a group. Come up with something. And now let's stay with that. Now that you have somebody in mind, and I hope you do, what 3 points would help you help that person understand that you are the best option? What 3 points would help you help that person understand that you are the best option? Maybe it's as simple as helping them understand that the thyroid meds they've been taking for 15 years haven't really fixed their problem. Maybe it's a simple fact that they don't have to live the way they're living. But when you think of somebody who you can say, this person needs to meet me, not for you selfishly, because you can help them. And this is what you do. So once you zero in on who that person is, and again, this is not somebody you are very close to, but it's somebody you have access to. If you could spend a few minutes with them, what are the 3 points that you would want to communicate that they suddenly go, wow, you are the best option for me? Next, what would we be surprised to know about you? I'm sure there are many things. Choose one. And that one I may ask for a few people to share, as well as the next one. What truth, if you told the group, would embarrass you, but is worth it to give everyone in the group a good laugh? What truth, if you told everyone here, would embarrass you a little bit, but it's so worth it because everybody's going to laugh and that makes you feel good? Allison just started to sweat. Here's the next one. What makes you unique and how does that give you an edge? This is a really important one because if you're going to come up with something like, I care about my patients, that's not unique. You're going to go, no, a lot of people don't. Everybody on this call would say they care about their patients. Everyone who's ever gone through Be Better would say that. Everyone who's ever been in Platinum would say that. So what makes you unique and how does that give you an edge? Because very often we miss those things. We look for what joins us with others. As human societal beings, we have two contradictory needs. We need to feel like a unique individual. But we also need to feel a sense of belonging. Which is why in high schools, somebody might get into a certain type of music, and then they start to dress a certain way because they want to show their uniqueness. They start to wear all black, and they become goth, and they listen to emo music. But then what happens is they hang out with other people like that. So they want to be unique, but they don't want to lose contact with a group. So sometimes you get too connected to the group and you ignore your uniqueness. You go, well, I'm a chiropractor, I'm a health practitioner, I love being part of Pompa's group because we all do things the right way. But don't forget there's something that makes you unique. And by the way, it's not always the shining attribute. Sometimes it's a challenge you've been through. Sometimes it's a struggle that you've been through. Sometimes it's a relative of yours who suffered, and as a result of that, you now have an edge. There is an answer to this question. So if you're saying, no, no, there's nothing about me that makes me unique, you're not thinking in the right direction. And if you're going, well, yeah, these things make me unique, but they don't give me an edge, you're not thinking hard enough. Cue stress. Challenge yourself to think harder. Next question, what is your value and what do you charge? What is your value? What is the value of your time? You can quantify it however you want. You could say per day, per week, per patient, per hour, per minute. You got to come up with a number. Somewhere you've got to be able to define your value. If somebody were interviewing for a job, they would quantify their value with an annual salary. They go, I'm worth $150,000 a year. If somebody does telephone consults, they might charge by the 30 minutes, or they might charge by the minute. But don't have that fear that makes you shrug and go, well, it all depends. It all depends. Depends on what the person needs. Because that leaves you with a big question mark. What a horrible way to live your professional life with a question mark over your value. Can you ever exceed your value? Sure. Can you do things for people above and beyond and receive more than your value? Of course, but you've got to start by saying, here's what I'm worth. So it would be dollars per. $100 an hour, $100 a minute, $1 million a lifetime, $1 million a year, $15,000 per patient. $30,000 per patient that I get well. Somewhere you just have to quantify it. What is your value? This makes lots of people uncomfortable because there's a commitment. But make it, because it allows you to recognize what you believe you're worth. And people aren't going to pay you more than you believe you're worth. So what is your value and what do you charge? Because I would guess that at least some of you charge less than you believe you deserve. That what you're compensated is not in line with your value. You can justify it. You can rationalize it. You go, yeah, I'm worth more, but if I charge what I'm worth, then none of the people who need my help will be able to afford me. That's a negative talk monster. That's rational lies. Next, what is your next milestone? What is your next milestone? Whether it's a little nudge of the needle ahead or whether it's miles and miles and light years ahead, what is your next milestone? And here's a really important question. What do you have to do next, meaning now, to get closer to that milestone? When you establish the milestone and look at it, what do you have to do next? What is the small step you have to take next to get to that milestone? And as Nas pointed out, we're not bogging ourselves down with the question of how will we get there, but all of us can answer the question, what is the next step? So what do you have to do now? Next question, how many people did you speak to yesterday about what you do for a living? Other than your customers, clients, patients, how many people did you speak to yesterday about what you do for a living? Allison, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. If there are any that you just don't feel like answering right now, you can say that. Okay. What you can say is, I couldn't answer that one. Because we know you can, right? So if there's anything that you say, I don't feel like sharing that right now, that's okay. But don't tell me you couldn't answer it. Fair?
Okay. Yeah.
Who can you call that can bring positive impact to your life and your business?
It's a patient named Michelle.
Do you want to share with us what Michelle can do for you?
Well, I don't know, other than I just have had a gut feeling and thinking, like, I should call her. And when you said that, she popped into my mind, and I don't know if it's people that she's influencing or I don't know.
Other than the gut feeling, what about her makes you feel like this is somebody that you could benefit from making the call? And by the way, it's always good to just make another human connection anyway. But why did your gut kind of go there? Like, what is your deep-lying suspicion about what she might do for you?
She is a very strong believer, and she's an older Black lady. And when she came into our office and signed up for a corrective plan, she was just so pumped about mm-hmm. how this was different and it was like going to change the world. Then she got a little jaded because everyone that she told to come in was worried about their insurance and things like that. I don't know. I just feel like I should nurture the relationship for some reason.
Good. Good. Now, did this really just come to mind when I asked a question, or was it sort of in your mind before?
It was in my mind, I guess.
And what prevented you from calling her sooner? Why did you have to wait until I prompted you?
Well, just excuses of lifetime. I mean, being at the office, and it slipped my mind, and then you're home, and it's Friday evening, and...
So will you call her today?
No, I will call her Monday morning.
Okay. What might prevent you from calling her Monday morning?
Nothing.
Good. Perfect answer.
Okay.
Who needs to meet you?
Was this a question that you expounded upon, like maybe someone we just met, but they need to know what we do?
Yeah, who that, when I say doesn't know you exist, really what I mean is they don't know that you can offer them help. It might be somebody you know casually, but they don't really know the depth of what you do for a living. But somebody that you could look at and go, I can help that person, and they have no idea that I could help them right now.
There were two people that popped in my mind, but...
Okay, give me one. Just give me one.
One was a person that we literally met a couple days ago, mm-hmm. Wants to invest in a wellness center and is excited about like what we do, but he literally has no idea what we do.
And what can you do for that person?
I'm going to invite them to my next workshop.
But what can you do for them? How can you make their life better? What makes you feel like they will benefit by knowing you?
It's someone who I think like he's ex-military and just he values the strength of his body. And I think that if we're able to offer him something that, I mean, basically that he's never experienced, like as far as chiropractic, the corrective part. Am I going in the right direction?
Maybe. Does he have any pain that you're aware of, any need that you're aware of that you think you can fill?
I'm not aware of it.
Okay. Let's go. Who's the other one?
It's this gentleman that waits on us every Thursday. We go to the same restaurant after the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows we're chiropractors, but he always just kind of jokes about, well, I'm glad my back doesn't hurt and I don't need you.
Okay. But might he need you?
Yes.
Why?
He just doesn't look healthy.
Okay. No, that's good. That's what I'm looking for. So you have a sense that if you really sat down and did some kind of exploration that it would reveal some things about lifestyle or conditions or something where you could help him, right?
Yeah.
What would be three things that you would need him to know before he would go, yes, I want your help?
That you can have a problem even if you're not in pain.
Okay.
That problems can be brewing before you get a symptom. That might
Good.
Be sort of the same thing, but.
Mm-hmm.
And investing in your health is worth it. I don't know.
That's good. Why don't you know? Investing in your health is worth it. Why do you question that?
Only because it's a matter of opinion at some point.
isn't everything you believe, isn't every belief that you hold simply an opinion that gets set in motion?
Yes.
So if you really believe that investment in your health is worth it, then that's something you should really be firm about.
Yes.
So I just want you to think just a little that I'm talking about Monday morning making a phone call and just approaching somebody, a waiter. Is he a waiter, did you say?
Yes.
A little differently. Imagine over time if you started to think that way. How many more people you could touch? How many more lives would connect with yours in a way that proved mutually beneficial? And this is where I say it's all in your court. And if you know you should do these things, but you don't because there are fires, realize it's your perception that's limiting you. It's the monsters that you're allowing to hold you back. Allison, what do you want us to know that we'd be surprised to know?
I'm afraid of spiders. I mean, other than that, maybe someone else should answer it.
No, no, you can do that. You're afraid of spiders. Any reason why?
I don't know. They make me sweat and want to throw up, and then I have bad dreams.
There's actually, and I'm not going to do it, but there is an exercise I do in a workshop with the concept of a spider. It is really cool. It would make you so uncomfortable, and then I promise you would never fear a spider again. But I'm not going to do that with you now. Just know in the back
maybe
of your mind,
later.
Maybe someday.
Okay.
What truth would embarrass you but is worth it to give everybody here a good laugh? I told you you can skip them, so if you want to be a big wuss, you can.
I don't think I'm being a chicken. I can't think of anything.
Okay.
But,
does anybody want to get her off the hook by sharing your something embarrassing that you think is just worth it to give us a good laugh?
Like something I've done or someone has done?
Anything.
I have a pretty simple one.
Good.
I think it's funny.
Go ahead.
So my life goal when I was younger was to be a pizza delivery guy.
Listen, if you work hard and nudge the needle, someday you'll get there. Just remember that. Just make sure it's like for a good pizza place, not like Domino's, right?
Oh, yeah.
Allison, what makes you unique and how does that give you an edge?
I think that my gift of faith makes me unique. And it gives me an edge because when, just knowing deep down that God has chosen me for a purpose, when I hear him speak and give me a direction, nobody's changing it, and nobody can tell me otherwise.
Are you comfortable spending a little time on this?
Sure.
Do you go to a church?
Yes.
Would you say everybody in that church shares that faith?
No.
Would you say there are some people who share that faith in that church?
Yes.
So that really doesn't make you unique. It's beautiful. It's noble. We can say a lot of wonderful things about it. But what is unique about your faith or your relationship? What is it that makes you different than everybody else, even in that setting? And I'm not saying better. I'm just saying unique. What part of you or what experience that you had makes you unique where you can say, I'm the only one who is this?
That makes it a bit more difficult.
And this is the good stress. This is my point.
I don't know. A small piece of my mind, which I think is kind of human nature, just wants to think that I am the only one that has this drive. And I know other people, I see it in other people, but not being cocky. Do you know what I mean?
Describe this drive. What is this drive?
I don't know, just waking up every morning knowing that I serve a higher purpose, humanity and serving people, and I mean, for the overall purpose of, like, becoming who God wanted me to be. I think
you know, you've all heard Dr. Pompa talk about, you know, the importance of sharing your story when you do your talks, right? Sharing your story. Everybody has a story. And I think when we really start to think about our lives from birth until now, nobody has had your exact life experiences. Nobody. Now, for any given experience, there are probably other people who would share it. But when you stack them and you go, this is me, there's probably nobody else on earth who's going to have those same exact experiences, including the missteps, the mistakes, the tragedies, the recoveries, the resilience. So I would just challenge all of you to uncover that, because when you do, it gives you a new kind of leverage. And sometimes this is hard for us because we want to be humble. I'm not asking you to be boastful. I'm just asking what makes you unique. And when we come back, and I'm going to bring this up on the next call, but when we come back and revisit it, very often people just have incredible breakthroughs. And nothing's changed other than the way they started to think about their own life. And they're like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm here because, you know, I have this gift of faith, and here's what it's brought me that nobody else has. Here's the story I have that nobody else has. Here's the mentor that I had that nobody else had. Here's what I learned from losing my faith and gaining it back. So I can't answer this for you, but Allison and everybody, I would say to you, there is something that you can uncover if you dig a little bit, if you really kind of turn this question inward, where you're going to go, yeah, this makes me unique. And it's not jumping out at you now, but it's there. So when the answer is, I'm part of the collective, I'm part of the people who have a great faith, I'm part of the people who have a purpose, that's good. It's all good. It's just not what makes you unique. And I might have shared with you in Indian culture, there's a word dharma, and it doesn't really have a direct English translation, but the closest would be purpose. But the belief is that everybody comes into this world with a very unique, special purpose that nobody else can fill. And the belief is that along the journey of life, you will meet people, so you help them fulfill their dharma as you fulfill yours. So if you look at that journey, there is a uniqueness that nobody else shares. I'm not asking you to connect with any culture other than your own, but when you think of that as a metaphor for the path of your life, there are absolutely things in there that make you unique. So I would just encourage you to kind of think a little further on that, okay?
Okay.
What's your next milestone?
A meeting that I set up for 2 weeks away, or I don't know.
What do you mean, a meeting that you set up for 2 weeks away?
It's kind of hard at all, like going into a big spiel of a story, but moving forward, like with our office and expanding,
right.
There's someone that is going to develop the property, and so I think like the next step there is just organization maybe and figuring out what we need to prepare for.
Okay. I'm going to encourage you to listen back to parts of this call.
Okay.
And just notice how often you make a statement tentative.
Okay.
Okay, just by saying maybe, I think maybe. And again, this is not a criticism. But the point around the program is I want everybody to realize the power you have over your own outcome. So when you create those thoughts of maybe, your outcomes become maybe. When you create thoughts of certainty, your outcomes become certain. So just, you know, a little exercise for you is to catch yourself. And I always say language is very revealing. You know, I really have become a student of what people reveal about themselves by the words that they use. And I'm not saying change it. I'm just saying, again, catch yourself. Go, you know, I just did it again. I just made it a maybe, when the truth is I have the power to make it a certainty. All right, can I ask you a final question? Can I ask you what your value is and what you charge?
$1,000 a day.
That's what you charge?
Well, no. I mean, that's the value that I put in my head.
Okay, so that's a good value, right? Makes you feel good now?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Should you be getting that?
Yes.
What do you charge now? Like if somebody says, hey, I'm interested, what do you charge? How would you answer that question?
think I have an answer.
Well, at what point do you tell me how much it will be?
When they ask you what you're looking for? Which I said in a question form.
Okay, so you give me a question form. What would somebody typically say when you say, what are you looking for?
Weight loss or pain relief.
Okay,
or...
so let's say I got both of those. Let's say I have arthritis and I'm 40 pounds overweight.
Yes.
How much is it?
$3,000.
How much?
Somewhere around three.
Well, you just went from a definitive to a maybe. So, and you know, if everybody listening is going, well, Phil, we can't know. We can't know until we meet the person. I know. I know. But you got to be able to say, here's what I'm worth and here's what I charge, because otherwise there's no alignment. There's a huge disconnect. So somewhere you just have to be able to quantify it. In other words, if you're worth $1,000 a day, you have to figure out how many hours you're going to work in a day. Four, then you're worth $250 an hour. So if somebody needs weight loss and pain relief, how many hours are you going to spend with them? So you'll charge $250 an hour. I'm not asking you to create something that is rigid. I'm just asking you to know in your mind for sure what you're worth and what you're willing to ask for. And as I said earlier, can you sometimes get more than that? Yes. But you've got to establish your value. And by the way, you are very brave for stepping forward at the very beginning, because I am putting you on the spot and I appreciate you allowing me to do that. I believe it will serve everyone here, because as they go through this themselves, they'll have a better reference for it. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Anything else you want to share?
No. I just appreciated these calls.
Okay, good. So when you get this, I would encourage you to really turn off your phone or put your phone away and spend a little time with it, because these are the things that you know. I'm not asking you to research. I'm not asking you to go on Google and do a search. I'm not asking you to run another ad. These are all things that you have the ability to answer right now. This is simple. And if it feels a little stressful, good. That's the huge stress I'm looking for. There's nothing here that requires research or more lessons. If you're willing to give yourself to this, this is where you get better. This is where life gets better. There's a part two, which you'll see. And part two has questions like, what that you spend your time on is bringing you the greatest return? This is a great question, because many of you are going to find you spend the most time on what brings you the lowest return. And that awareness prompts you to make a change. Now, not only do we look at what that you spend your time on is bringing you the greatest return, but of course we counter it with what that you spend your time on is bringing you the least return. And you're going to find they are usually inverse. I also ask on this form, are you using the Max 10 strategy with any regularity? So simply yes or no. But if you answered no, I want you to think about this and answer it. What would a sense of being able to conquer each day do for you? Next question, how many new patients should you attract in the week ahead? Now, you can come back with 50 different questions. You can go, based on what? Well, what do you mean new patients? Does that include patients who were here before? What does that mean? Does that mean it's going to be a high week, so I'm going to call everybody and get referrals? No, this is just simply for you. How many new patients should you attract this week? Because how else can you tell if you're doing well? Unless you pick a number. And once you pick the number, here's the question that drives you to act. How can you get those patients committed in the next 48 hours? And if you face the question, you will find an answer. What's the answer? I don't know. It's in you. Maybe it's doing a quick seminar, an emergency seminar. You're going, guys, I just learned this stuff. Everybody needs to know it. You need to come to my seminar. There are only 100 seats. It's going to sell out. Register immediately. Maybe it's getting two people on the phone 8 hours a day for 3 days. I mean, I'm just pulling random scenarios. But when you answer the question, how many new patients you should attract this week, and then you answer the question, how can you get those patients committed in the next 48 hours, guess what happens? You get new patients. If that's a goal, it's achieved. Not by any sophisticated sales funnel, not by running some kind of ad. You figure this out for you. When you finish that, there's another page that asks you to take a quick glance at your progress with your creative tension. Where are you now? Where do you want to be? What's the next milestone? And how will you head off the monsters? Okay, I told you that when we wrap up this process, I'm going to give you a great tool for recovery. You're going to love this. But you're going to love this only if you do it. If the word can't shows up, you're allowing a negative talk monster to limit you. If the word but shows up, you're allowing the negative talk monster to limit you. So you'll make the decision. My choice for you would be that everybody does two things. Go through this form as if you're taking the most important exam of your life. Because this is you making you better. You know the principles now. If you have at all entertained the concept of creative tension, you know your life could be a little better than it is, or maybe a lot better than it is. So this is just now focusing that. This is like putting the magnifying glass over the leaf. You're just focusing that sunlight. You're going, this is what I have to do. I've given you the questions. It's easy. All you have to do is answer it. So if you're willing to take that on, that's the good stress. That's the huge stress. These questions aren't easy. They make you think. They make you introspective. And I'm telling you something. You know every answer. You just sometimes have to look for it. You know. So what is this great tool? Well, the first thing I would ask you to do is revisit one of the early directives I gave you, creating your ideal calendar. Now that you have a greater sense of your own power to create, take a look at that ideal calendar. Is it in fact ideal, or were you limited? And if you need to change it, change it. Make it better for you. But now I want you to add something, and not only to your ideal calendar, to your real calendar. When I first tell you about this, you may hear can't. You may hear but. Those are monsters. There's nobody here who can't, except those who believe they can. The tool is this: 4 days you love. 4 days you love. Every month, before it becomes that month. So you do this for November before October ends. You circle 4 days on the calendar. These are days you love. How do you know you will love them? Because you're only going to put things on those days that you absolutely love. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean vacation days. It doesn't mean like you're constantly running to the beach. There are things about your work that you love. Personally, I really love doing seminars. I do. I love speaking to groups of people. So for me, if I'm planning a day I love, I'm okay putting that in there. Now, that's nice. I make money on a day that I love. I don't love going to the dentist. I love my dentist, but I don't love going to see her. So if I have to go to the dentist, I'll schedule an appointment, but I'll look at my calendar and I go, oh, no, I can't do it on the 15th. That's a day I love. If there's a meeting that I know I have to have but I don't want to have, and they go, all right, Phil, I'll be in town on the 15th. Can you meet then? If I look at this, this is firm. I'm going to say, no, I can't do it on that day. I don't tell them because it's a day I love. I just say I'm busy. I'm booked. This is the greatest recovery tool, because as soon as you finish one, you're looking forward to the next. You never get bogged down on a day that you love. And if it is a day that you decide you want to party a little bit or go to the beach, great. I'm just not asking you to create 4 days of partying every month. I'm just saying make them days you love. These are different for everybody. If you hate doing payroll, don't do payroll on a day you love. If you hate paying bills, don't pay bills on a day you love. You've got roughly 30, 31 days in every month. I'm asking you to take four. That leaves 27. So there's nobody who can't do this. The question is, are you willing to? Any final thoughts, comments, questions? And by the way, on our next call, I want you to tell me about the days you love, whether you planned them, whether you just planned them. or whether you actually experienced one, because why not set one up for next week, day that you love. Any final thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all? This is also open to Sarah, who just made it through the non-hurricane, and Andrea, who's driving through the mountains. Can I get one final thought, one little breath, one little something before we terminate this call?
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Anyone else that, struggled with, how are you unique?
It's a good question. Has anyone else struggled with how are you unique?
I think we all probably struggle with it a little bit.
I think so,
I
too. I was hoping nobody answered, because then I would say, now you know what makes you unique. You're the only one who struggles with this, but no. Yes, everyone struggles with this until you get there. And that's why I said it's almost like a release. It's not that you change something about you. You just change your awareness. You change your perspective. And you just realize you have leverage that nobody else has. So if you think back to when I started this call, which was not that long ago, 90 minutes or so, I said stress and recovery. So these questions are supposed to force you to think. They're not supposed to be easy. But it's that process of digging and uncovering it that really makes you better. So honestly, everybody struggles with that. Unless they've done it before, unless they've done this in some other workshop or just had the insight to uncover what makes them unique, because we're usually trained and taught as a part of a collective. School is a collective. So you're not being taught to be unique. You're being taught to be like everyone else. So now I'm asking you to do something that is not conventionally asked of you, and it's challenging. But it's there, and I'm anxious to hear what it is on our next call. So until we speak again, it's always fun hanging out with you guys. Talk to you in a couple of weeks. Be better, everybody. Bye-bye.